No matter where you fall on the political spectrum, most everyone agrees that paying for healthcare, ER visits, filling prescriptions, getting new glasses, can be expensive. For those with health insurance, some of that burden is eased by your provider. But for those without, sometimes you have to make a decision between receiving care and paying your rent. This is In the Hive. I'm Emily Means. In 2016, 264,900 Utahns, or 8% of Utahns, were without health insurance, which includes private coverage and government programs, according to data from the Utah Department of Health. So, what's it like to navigate the healthcare system without reliable coverage and as a person with limited means? Grace Turner and Kylie Rodriguez Cairo share their experiences.
All right, my name is Grace Turner, and I'm from Salt Lake City, Utah. We have had to decide sometimes between healthcare and other basic needs. For example, right now, even though my children are on CHIP, for example, a doctor visit costs $25 and an emergency room visit costs $300. Now, for us, that's going to put us off on our rent, and that's going to mean really squeezing tight on our grocery bills, too. You know, it's been up and down kind of navigating the system because they can get vaccines for free when they're on CHIP, which is really good. But the problem is the paperwork and the system to make sure you're signed up is you need to be recertified every few months. Usually that takes a long time. Sometimes you'll kind of randomly get a notice that you've been kicked off. And then you're like panicking and you call them and it turns out to be some sort of glitch. And so then you have to wait for them to fix that. That has happened to me 3 times now where I'll receive a notice that we've been kicked off. And then I'm kind of panicking and thinking, well, you know, what could have happened? Like our income didn't change or anything. And then I'll call them and they're kind of like, yeah, sometimes that happens. We'll figure it out. The thing with that is then maybe I've had a doctor's appointment that I had to cancel and wait till they get it figured out. And then I'm delaying their vaccines. And that makes me really nervous. I guess I would just add from my perspective, I've kind of been in a place where I was eligible because when you're pregnant in Utah, the bracket goes up. And for me, it was just so different being able to go to the doctor right away. If I was even maybe paranoid that something was wrong, I could go and get the baby checked out and make sure the pregnancy was doing well. And so then to have that taken away and now suddenly it's like every little thing, you know, I'm kind of trying to Google my symptoms and stuff. And I think it's kind of dangerous and I shouldn't be living like this. And especially if someone were in another situation where maybe they have a medical condition that could mean something really bad is happening when they should be going to the doctor, I would just hate to be in that place.
My name is Kylie Rodriguez Cairo, and I am in Salt Lake City. With mental illness, you know, as someone who has 5 mental illnesses, I've had to often choose between healthcare and basic needs. I don't think people realize how difficult it is to get on disability. And so because of that, a lot of people with mental illness, including myself, end up working part-time jobs without benefits. So there was a period of time where I went uninsured. And then even when I was insured, you know, it's really difficult to afford inpatient mental health treatment. The costs are astronomical. And so, you know, at one point when I voluntarily hospitalized myself, I had no choice. It was a real struggle to even do that because I knew the bills that I would be facing even with health insurance. And I had no choice at the time because I was dealing with, you know, suicidal thought and ideation. But after I got the bill, it was one of those things where I definitely had to, like, you know, look at my life and say, do I want to just ignore this so I can pay my rent, so I can feed myself, so I can feed my cat, or do I pay this and just forego, like, my basic needs? So, of course, I ended up kind of just sitting on the bill because, you know, if you're not doing what you need to take care of yourself in the moment, then your mental health is just going to get worse. And it's kind of a vicious cycle for people who are disabled and who live in poverty. You know, navigating the healthcare system as someone with mental illnesses is super difficult, even when you have good insurance. Like any illness, it changes and you have to change how you manage it. And it's constant realignment and constant like having to figure out that balance. And unfortunately, finding that balance usually costs money.
Stacy Stanford is the health policy analyst at Utah Health Policy Project. UHPP's biggest focus is getting people access to care by providing them with access to health insurance. And for underserved populations, that often means through Medicaid, the Children's Health Insurance Program, or CHIP, and the Affordable Care Act. To start with, I asked Stanford to walk us through the cost of meeting basic medical needs.
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on who you are and what your needs are. But basically what you're looking at when it comes to healthcare expenses is you're looking at a monthly premium, which is what you pay monthly just to kind of hold on to your service. That's you paying into the pool so that you get benefits out of it. But then on top of that, we have cost sharing measures. So when you go into the doctor, you have to pay a copay. So, you know, $10, $20, $50, $100, depending on what your coverage is. And then on top of that, there's also the deductibles. So if your plan says that we won't help you out until you pay $1,000, $3,000, $5,000, then on top of your copay, you're paying basically out of pocket for the appointment or the prescription or the procedure or whatever it is until you hit that deductible. So we're looking at those kind of expenses just from like a health insurance perspective. And those kind of things can contribute to increasing costs very quickly, especially with the cost sharing. If you have a prescription, you know, that's hundreds of dollars a month and you haven't met your deductible yet, you're paying out of pocket to get that prescription that you need. And those kind of things can really add up. Healthcare costs are high. I mean, the reason that premium costs are high and deductible costs are high is because healthcare is expensive. In the United States, our prices are high. So the price of going to a doctor, the price for our medications, the prices especially for procedures and hospitalization, those costs are going up and those costs are much higher than we see around the world in general.
Well, let's talk about access to these services. This is a tricky system to understand, even for people who are more well-connected than others. How does someone in a low-income bracket find and connect with the resources that they need?
That's really tricky. It's very easy for lower-income folks to kind of get lost and overlooked in this. And so Utah Health Policy Project and, you know, other organizations, we work on targeting especially the underserved community that may not speak English as a first language, may not read or write very well, may not have access to the internet at home, those kind of things. And so we have, you know, direct enrollment navigators that can sit down and help those people sign up for health insurance directly, answer those questions directly, call them back and say, okay, did you find a doctor? Have you paid your premium? And some of that health insurance education, because if you've been uninsured your whole life, you don't know what a premium is. You don't know how a deductible works. And so we do a lot of education around those areas as well so that folks can navigate the system on their own and be more informed.
Can you talk more about the role of these navigators and enrollment assisters?
So the navigators and enrollment assisters historically have been funded primarily through navigator grants, which is a part of the Affordable Care Act. It's a federal program. But recently, those numbers have been cut dramatically, the funding for those grants. They cut down last year from $63 million to $36 million. Then this year just cut again from $36 to $10. So that's $10 million for 50 states for all of these programs that exist. And that's just not sustainable. I know around the country, people are laying off their assisters and really causing a lot of problems. Luckily in Utah, UHPP, we were prepared for this. We kind of saw it coming. And so we're looking at just kind of a patchwork of other grants and funding sources because we've lost that one big funding stream from the federal government.
So in terms of number of people who might lose access because of these cuts, can you speak to that at all? What does that mean for people in the world?
Yeah, it's so hard to quantify what that means because it's hard to measure the people you don't reach. You know, it's really hard to put a number on the people that you don't find and that you don't help. And so we know that luckily with UHPP, it's not going to have a difference at all because we're not going anywhere. We're not laying anybody off. We're not cutting services. But there are other states where I know that, you know, I've seen on Twitter programs talk about, well, okay, we just lost 80% of our funding. There goes 80% of our staff. And therefore, 80% of the people that they've helped in prior years are now going without or trying to navigate the system by using Google or something that it's not quite that simple unless you're really literate in fine print. There's a lot of scams out there and things like that. So this is really harmful, but it's really harmful, especially for those who are the most underserved, particularly, you know, non-English speakers, people who are less literate in general or less literate when it comes to like the internet and things like that. Sure. So.
Well, we mentioned Medicaid a little bit earlier, and Medicaid always seems to be a hot topic in Utah, you know, back and forth between the legislature. Do we expand it? Do we not expand it? Right now, Utah is considering expanding Medicaid fully through a ballot initiative that will be voted on later this year. Maybe first you can talk about what the current status of Medicaid is here in Utah.
Currently, in order to qualify for Medicaid, you can't just be poor. That's not enough. You have to also check one of several boxes. So you have to be a parent, you have to be a child, you have to be, you know, a senior or disabled. And disabled is kind of a term I put in like quotes because not nearly everyone with a disability will qualify. You have to have the right disability with the right piece of paper from your doctor that checks the right boxes for the government to consider you technically disabled. I used a wheelchair for years at full time and did not qualify for Medicaid because they didn't consider me disabled. And that's a story that I've heard over and over again. So Medicaid expansion, doing a full expansion, as we're looking at under the ballot initiative, simplifies things. If it makes it so if you're poor enough, then you can qualify without having to go to the doctor and try to qualify as disabled, going through those kind of hoops. And so it's $17,000 a year for an individual, and it's about $33,000 for a family of four. So if this initiative passes and your income is low enough, then you can qualify for Medicaid. And so it's really simplifying it and opening up eligibility for people that are falling through the cracks, the people who are disabled but are not technically disabled. And so they're really having a hard time working, having a hard time, therefore, getting health insurance. And so this can help them. Or parents. Right now, parents lose their Medicaid coverage if they go over like 60% of the federal poverty line. And they don't qualify for Obamacare until 100%. So there's this huge income bracket where if they make too much, they're penalized because they don't qualify for any help. Mm-hmm. So we're encouraging parents to keep their incomes low in order to keep their benefits. So we're trying to simplify this and kind of bridge those gaps so that people have an outlet, an avenue for health insurance to help them with their, regardless of the other things that are going on in their life.
Can you talk about this in terms of money? Because I think a lot of people like to think of it that way, especially the Utah legislature. If this ballot initiative passes, how do we pay for it?
Yeah, I think that that's a really important point to raise because it's a value decision here. You have to decide as a voter if it's worth it to you to help provide coverage to these, you know, 100,000, 150,000 Utahns who are really poor and don't have options for health insurance. And so what we've done is in the ballot initiative, it's paid for by a really small increase in the non-food sales tax. And so this equates to about a penny on a movie ticket. And so for that cost of, you know, a penny on every $9 you spend, that provides health insurance for these 100,000 people. So it really is a value judgment where voters have to decide, okay, is that extra penny, are those extra couple cents on a shopping trip worth it to me to help these people who are struggling in the moment? And what's even better is that if we want to focus just on the numbers, for me, I care about the human lives and, you know, this, but sometimes that's not quite enough of a persuasive argument for some people. And so there's the economic benefit for all of us in Utah. It obviously benefits those 100,000 people who qualify, but it benefits the other 3 million of us because we get $800 million a year of our taxes back that is currently just going to other states. There's 33 other states that have expanded Medicaid, and they get these federal tax benefits that Utahns are paying into, but we're not receiving because we haven't expanded Medicaid yet. So $800 million of a year of our taxes are just going to help other states. So that's a direct benefit that we would see back here. We'd also see 14,000 new jobs created every year because of this.
And how?
How? Right? Isn't that amazing? So, I mean, it's kind of a broad-reaching effect. So there's healthcare sector jobs that would be created, and then there's the economic side is not where I'm quite as smart, but there's that economic benefit where people get healthier, people go to work.
They become more
productive. Companies are hiring because there's more people looking for work. There's more healthcare, doctor's offices in small towns, you know, a clinic in a small town that suddenly needs a new receptionist or something because more of the community has health insurance. So we're going to be releasing a report soon that really breaks down more of that impact. But 14,000 jobs is huge, and that's connected to about $2 billion a year in economic activity. Those are those people getting health insurance, going shopping, buying things at local stores and generating that impact because they can, because they're not stuck in bed, sick without access to health care. So sure. This is really great for the economics of the state as well.
So Utah could very well decide to expand Medicaid, but looking at the U.S. House's 2019 budget, that includes about a $1.5 trillion worth of cuts to Medicaid and other health programs. So what would happen if Medicaid was unavailable?
Yeah, you know, Medicaid is such an incredibly valuable program. It's been around 53 years and has just grown exponentially in that time because it works and because there is such a huge benefit to the state to implement it, the state to expand it. The people who benefit from it, the medical providers. I mean, Medicaid is a really wonderful program that works in a way unlike anything else. I mean, it offers a range of benefits far beyond those offered under Medicare, which is something that most people don't know. If grandma or mom or dad need nursing home coverage, that's not paid for by Medicare, that's paid for by Medicaid. Hmm. Home health benefits, that's home health services, that's paid for by Medicaid, not Medicare. There's a lot of things that are not available under any other program that it is Medicaid or nothing to get those specific benefits, especially things that are needed by people with the most complex health conditions and disabilities, really rely on the services of Medicaid. Because private insurance doesn't offer the things they need. Medicare doesn't offer the things they need. So it really is a one-of-a-kind program that, if it went away, would be devastating to those the most in need. To the poorest, the sickest, would be absolutely devastating. And we're seeing, you know, threats on a big, broad level. Last year, we saw 5-6 ACA repeal attempts that would have cut $800 billion, you know, $1 trillion to the program. But we're also seeing now that those big attempts failed. We're seeing smaller attempts to chip away at the Medicaid program. We're seeing several states that have passed work requirements. We're seeing states that are looking at lifetime limits or adding premiums and copays and things that currently don't exist and chipping away at the program in that way. And that's, you know, it's less harmful than a $1 trillion cut in one swipe, but still really damaging to the program overall and to the intent of the program overall.
The last thing I want to ask you, and maybe this will be completely oversimplifying this entire conversation, but what's one thing that you want people to understand about the healthcare system in Utah?
I think that the healthcare system in Utah, honestly, would be so much stronger if we would fully expand Medicaid. That a lot of the issues in the system, a lot of the we could do so much if issues that come up are tied to a lack of funding because of a lack of Medicaid expansion. So I think passing Proposition 3 in November opens up a lot of opportunities for those Utahns in the coverage gap, but also for doctors and hospitals and healthcare providers and the mental health community, the suicide awareness. There's so much that could be done with that Medicaid funding, with the Medicaid coverage for people. So that's really what it comes down to, is that we need Medicaid expansion.
Stacy Stanford from the Utah Health Policy Project, thank you so much for talking with
me. Thank you.
Stanford mentioned the role of navigators in helping people understand the complexities of being insured. Turns out, students from the University of Utah are filling a similar role for underserved populations through Connect to Health, an organization that grew out of a 2012 student praxis lab with the goal of bringing together those in need with the community organizations that can provide the resources they're looking for. Connect to Health has volunteers at 4th Street Clinic in Salt Lake City and throughout the University of Utah healthcare system. I talked with Connect to Health director Alexis Lee and volunteer Jessica Garcia about the role the organization plays in its clients' access to resources that contribute to their overall wellness. Here's Lee.
What we do is we have a team of student volunteers who work with patients one-on-one to talk to them about the needs that maybe aren't being addressed as a part of traditional healthcare. So it's sort of the things that affect your health status but are not necessarily going to be treated by your doctor. And those are things like your needs for food, clothing, housing, transportation, maybe legal issues that you have going on, maybe procuring child or elder care for the people who you take care of. Those types of needs that might impact your ability to focus on your health or to follow your doctor's recommendations but maybe aren't always being addressed. Our volunteers will meet with those patients one-on-one, kind of assess those needs, and create what we call a resource prescription to help them get connected with resources in the community who can help them meet those needs.
Can you talk about how those different needs tie into your health and well-being?
Studies show that about 1 in 5 patients have one unmet social need. So that's a lot of people. If you think about, you know, every fifth person who walks into a doctor's office is needing something, that's a lot of people. Those social needs are kind of being termed in the healthcare world as the social determinants of health. And those social determinants of health are what we like to call upstream, meaning that they're going to affect a person or a family kind of before they would ever even walk into a clinic and before a healthcare condition might exist and manifest and then be treated in that clinic. And those social determinants of health are said to make up a greater proportion of one's overall health and wellness than that medical care that they receive. And that makes sense because a lot of our life happens outside of the clinic walls, not inside of the clinic walls.
It seems like whatever people are looking for, there's probably a place where they can get it. They can have that need met. And it's just a matter of knowing where to look. So why do you think people aren't more aware of these resources?
I think a big part of it is that it's hard to know all of the answers and to know everything that is available. You know, if you haven't been doing this as your full-time job and putting together a resource list, it's difficult to know, oh, where can I get rent assistance? Or where is my local food pantry? Or, you know, oh, there's a way for me to get help giving childcare or elder care so that I can make it to work and have that work's income sustain me. Knowing all of that, it's just difficult for people. And it's also difficult for those organizations to spread the word to every single person in, you know, in the whole state of Utah or in their whole community where they might serve others. So I think it's just, it's not easy. And often the systems aren't exactly easy to navigate. And I think that our volunteers would say that learning the systems is one of the things that they become familiar with so that they can then be a better resource for patients because they take that burden off of people so that they know how to do things and they don't have to put that on the patients who need help.
Well, Jessica, you are boots on the ground in the clinic every week. What are the needs that people are most often looking for?
So I volunteer up at pediatric specialty up at the U and also the 4th Street down here in downtown. And at 4th Street, I would say the number one thing that people need are shelter, food, clothing. And most people there like want to get an interview or they just want food or trying to supply for their family. And it's kind of hard for them there to kind of sort through all that stuff. Those are the bigger things that patients there would like. And at pediatrics, so they have special needs kids, and so they would like to do activities during the summer, and that's kind of what they would like there. And insurance is also a big one there, but those are the two up there.
I would say another thing that we see pretty consistently across all our patient populations, because we're helping patients at the 4th Street Clinic, as Jess mentioned, up at the pediatric neurology and endocrinology clinics. We're in general pediatrics. We're in the internal medicine, which is an inpatient unit up at the hospital. We're in labor and delivery, where moms are just delivering babies. And then we're also at Super Rad, which is a clinic for women who have substance use disorders, either currently or previously, and are currently pregnant. And across all of those patient populations, one of the most common needs that we see is food insecurity, which also makes sense because in Utah, it's about 1 in every 5 children are going hungry.
When you're writing up your, what do you call it,
resource prescription.
What services and organizations are you connecting people with?
A big one is Community Action Program. Yeah, that's a big one that is here, but we usually get them with like those kind of resources. And I like to highlight the number and kind of like go through step by step of what they need, because exactly what you were saying earlier, like it's hard to navigate through it all. So when I find something that I think that they will like, I'll like tell them like, hey, these are the steps, go through these. And if not, I will call on my own time to make sure like that they are still running, that they're still good, and like that they are the green light to go.
So you basically kind of give them instructions on how to go about finding these resources.
Absolutely.
Our mission is to empower individuals to utilize community resources in order to cultivate multidimensional health. So a big part of that empowerment is really trying to break down every barrier possible for patients, because oftentimes we're asking people who have the least to do the most and to jump through the most hoops. So if possible, where possible, we try to really outline for people, these are the steps that you take. This is their address. This is their phone number. These are the hours that they're open. When you go, this is what you can expect. These are the documents you have to bring. If there's anything that we can help them fill out ahead of time, like an application, or if there's an eligibility phone call involved, those types of things are things that our health mentors are doing our best to help families and patients walk through those steps ahead of time or understand what will be asked of them, so that when they get to those different resource providers, they're prepared to have a successful encounter and to get what they need.
Well, maybe we can talk a little bit about what's next for Connect to Health. I mean, you said you're in 4th Street Clinic, you're in all these different places, but what's the next step for this organization?
We actually work really closely with partners in case management and social work up at University of Utah Hospital, and they have been huge advocates and allies for our program. And what we like to do is we like to try and kind of take care of some of those like basic needs, as we've talked about, because case managers and social workers are certainly qualified and competent to take care of those needs, but they're often so time consuming that they need to focus on kind of things more to the top of their licensure, like acute mental health conditions or acute medical needs for a patient who might be discharging from the hospital. So we've been working together to create a new workflow that'll essentially allow us to ask every patient admitted. We're starting out on internal medicine units, so we're piloting it that starting this fall semester, so coming up at the beginning of September. But what we're going to be doing is the case manager will be asking every single patient who gets admitted to these units, do you need help with food, clothing, housing, transportation? There's kind of a set list, and if any of those patients say yes, they'll be referred to Connect to Health so that we can then go work with those patients. So we're really excited. This process is what's known as universal screening. So the nice thing is it's not targeted. We're not asking people who might look like they need help, or, you know, somebody who has a particular, you know, they're uninsured, so of course they need help. We're asking everybody, because it could be anybody and everybody who could need help with these services. So we're really excited to start kind of this universal screening process. And then we're also getting those results incorporated into the electronic medical record, which will hopefully allow us to track how these needs and addressing these needs might affect people's long-term health outcomes.
That was Alexis Lee and Jessica Garcia from Connect to Health. Have you had any struggles meeting your own healthcare needs? Weigh in at KCPW's Facebook page, KCPW 88.3, or feel free to email us at comments@kcpw.org with your feedback and questions. Thanks to the KCPW team for their support of this show, as well as to Andrew Shaw, who produced the show's theme music. And thank you for tuning in. You can find podcasts of In the Hive at kcpw.org. Up next is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Emily Means. Thanks for listening.